Subscribe to Nick Holt on Substack for access to premium content. Go to www.nickholt.substack.com and subscribe today.
Inside Out with Nick Holt.
Adam Crichton is my guest today. He is the Washington correspondent at the Australian newspaper, currently based in DC. Adam will be joining me in just a second to talk about the US midterms, which are now 2 weeks away. Many are calling this the most important midterm election in US history for a couple of fairly obvious reasons. The American people are not doing too well under the Biden administration. Can the Republicans take back the House and the Senate? And does that place Donald Trump in a position to announce his candidacy? Adam, thanks for coming back on the show.
No worries at all. It's good to be here.
What's the general pulse amongst journalists in America, yourself included in that category?
Well, look, I think everyone's pretty shocked that in the past 2 or 3 weeks there has been this extraordinary reemergence of a red wave, so to speak, which you alluded to there in the introduction. I mean, over the summer, if you were a Democrat, a pro-Democrat journalist or a Democrat-aligned journalist, you would have been pretty happy because the red wave everyone was talking about earlier in the year really turned into a trickle or completely vanished. But yes, since the past 4 weeks, you've seen a pretty steady and strong turnaround in the polls, and not just one or two polls, pretty much all of them, and even the polls that tend to be more aligned with the Democratic Party are showing the same thing, and that is that the generic question, are you going to vote a Democrat or Republican? When that is asked, more people now are saying Republican, which is, which certainly wasn't happening 6 weeks ago. So I think at the moment, journalists are trying to work out why. And I mean, if you follow on Twitter, it says there's no good explanation, really. I mean, I think the best explanation, honestly, is that most Americans weren't paying any attention to the race and have just started paying attention and starting to think about who and why they're going to vote, and have decided that they don't like the current environment for whatever reason, and so they're going to vote for the opposition, which in this case is the Republican Party.
And perhaps there's no more stark an example than that than New York, which is really almost an institution of Democratic governance in the last 50-odd years.
Yes.
You posted something this morning. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. What's going on there?
Yeah, look, it is really interesting. As you point out, New York is a Democrat stronghold. And, it's been a microcosm, if you like, of what we just talked about. There's this been extraordinary collapse in the polling lead of the Democrat governor there, Kathy Hochul. She's relatively new. I mean, she was lieutenant governor, but she took over last year when Andrew Cuomo resigned because of those sexual misconduct allegations. And, she had a commanding lead until about 4 weeks ago. And there was one poll where the Republicans are even now ahead, which is just extraordinary. That state voted for Biden, I think 61 or something percent in 2020. So that's, that is very blue. And at least according to these polls, that same electorate is now 50-50 pretty much for the governor's race. And it's a very important governor's race. I mean, this is the third or fourth most popular state in the US, the keys to New York City. It's a very important race. I mean, personally, I don't think that Republican Lee Zeldin will get across the line. I mean, it would be remarkable if he did, but it just seems too big an ask. But frankly, even if he comes close, that probably suggests that there's going to be a red wave across the rest of the country, and Republicans will easily retake the Senate, even if he comes close. But the problem with the Democrats' campaign is they've been focusing on January the 6th, which is almost 2 years ago. I mean, in January coming up, and they've been focusing on abortion rights and so forth. From my point of view, these are relatively niche issues. I mean, other people would obviously take great offence to that, but I think compared to inflation and the economy and crime, they are niche issues. And so the governor up there is just she's just released a new ad, on crime, the first ad on crime that she's issued, basically trying to say that the Dems are doing things up there to crack down on the crime spree, but it might be a case of too little too late.
Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to a deeper issue Well, not an issue for the Republican Party, but for the Democrats, I think. Admittedly, I don't watch TV news. I try to catch Trump's rallies each Sunday morning. They're becoming a bit of a staple. A couple of cold beers and a roast lamb.
Yes.
On Rumble. And I'll try and watch Tucker Carlson's monologue in the morning because I just think he's making great TV. And, you know, of course, I'll read various articles by yourself and other people. But the picture that I'm seeing is similar to what I was seeing in 2015, 2016, and that is that they just don't get it because they don't understand the great unwashed. They don't understand the general public, the pulse of the general public. And I'm talking more about the politicians here as well, the Democrat politicians. So
yes.
The picture I'm seeing is a two-sided coin again, which is that as Trump gets more and more popular, they become more and more incompetent.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. I think there certainly is a huge disconnect, as you suggest, between the, you know, kind of the political media class, which is overwhelmingly pro-Democrat and also wealthy and urban, with the rest of the country. I mean, I've actually just come back from Arizona, spending a bit of time there, 3 days. Went to a Carrie Lake rally.
Oh, okay, nice.
On Wednesday night, and you know, it's a very, very different place there from here. I was doing a story on school choice, which is a big issue in that state. Basically, they've introduced a voucher system, which is pretty revolutionary. There's no other state
that's right
in the US that has done that. And you know, I was talking to a mum there who homeschools her 5 children, and it was just extraordinary. I've never really spoken to a homeschooling mum before who, you know, does it all, and it was just fascinating. And just reminded me how different, you know, her attitudes and views of the world were from, well, not only the rest of America, but also, well, at least not only elite America, but also Australia, actually, you know, where that would be very rare. But, you know, in this country, in this state, she's not that rare. I mean, there's a huge homeschool movement there, probably at least 5% of parents, maybe up to 10%, do homeschool their kids, which is an enormous fraction. And certainly they won't be voting Democrat because they're, you know, they never...
No.
At least until the voucher came along, they never got any help at all. But with this voucher thing, they are getting some help. But anyway, the point was that, you know, there's just so much variation across the US, and in my sense from being in Arizona, was there's going to be certainly a red landslide there in favor of Carrie Lake, who's the Republican contender for governor. She seems a pretty, you know, a pretty impressive candidate, actually. That's my view. Whatever you think of her politics, she presents very well.
I think she's an outstanding candidate.
Yes.
I've interviewed her, but I don't know her personally. So.
Oh, really? Oh, you have? Wow, that's impressive. Wow, okay. She's pretty hard to get hold of. When did you do that?
I interviewed her the day that 60 Minutes tried to do their hit piece on her.
Okay, yes, I remember that.
I just messaged her on Twitter and said, I'll give you a fair interview.
Oh, wow, okay. Okay, I'll have to check it out.
It's on nickholt.substack.com. And... anyways, the reason I bring that up is that we spoke about this voucher program, right? I believe they've got another name for it.
Yeah, the ESA. The ESA accounts.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. And she's essentially saying that, you know, because of COVID, kids were forced back into the home with their reading material, and they started to they started to see what they were learning at school and going, hang on a second. I didn't. Why are you teaching my kids that men can have babies?
Yeah, no, that's exactly true. I think the, you know, in the short term, I think the teachers unions did well out of the pandemic, or at least their members did, because they got, you know, they got paid to do no work for, you know, for 18 months, which I guess is a pretty good deal. But
yeah, yeah.
But long term, I think it's been an absolute disaster for that movement, because you're seeing across the US now this huge shift to private schools, charter schools, and certainly out of the public system. And I think states like Arizona, what they've just done, this is just the beginning. I think a lot of other states will do similar things. There's already soundings in Texas and in Florida for similar policies. So I think, you know, there's a lot of angry parents in the US that they, you know, both with the curriculum and also with the perceived laziness of some teachers throughout that period, which I think is a memory that's not going to die off quickly.
All right, let's get on to the big guy, Donald J. Trump, who I'm certainly I'm not a political man, Adam. I'm just a Trump fan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, he's very entertaining. I mean, he's extremely entertaining.
He's one of the great entertainers of all time. But I also think he's got some of the best. Yeah, you know, I posted a story last week. Is Trump the best, the most successful president in U.S. history? Question mark.
Yes.
And then I listed from the whitehouse.gov every single policy and achievement that they did throughout the 4 years of that first term. Yes. It's quite extraordinary.
It is.
And that's the main reason. Well, I guess it's a combination, but that's a big part of the reason why he gets so many bums on seats at these rallies.
Oh, yeah.
They're going there for the show, the Trump show, but also they love this guy in a way that the media wants to try and deem like a cult or some sort of ridiculous.
Yes.
He's a populist. The fact that they are not reporting, the general left-wing mainstream media continue to pretend and sell the idea that he's not popular is just extraordinary. And when I see those rallies, I see a man who is fairly hell-bent on taking that presidency back. What do you think? I guess I'll ask you two questions here. If they take back the House and the Senate, does Trump announce his candidacy?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. And, I mean, it seems like he is going to wait until after the midterms, which I think it's been a relief to the Republican Party, which would rather talk about inflation and the economy at this point than Donald Trump. I mean, does he announce it? Yeah, look, I mean, if you talk to any Republican strategist in Washington, they always say that he's definitely going to run. So that's what I'm told, and I guess I just have to believe them. They're better informed than me. So I guess he will, which means a lot more entertainment. My only concern, I suppose, as a foreigner and an observer and someone who would really like the Democrats to be taught a lesson for their COVID policies, which I thought were insanely destructive, that he might lose if he wins the nomination. That's my main fear. Because remember, he lost last time, by a lot. And as you point out correctly.
Allegedly.
Well, look, I mean, I think you've just got to go with the official figures. I mean, I don't doubt there was some fraud. There's always fraud in every election to some extent. But the question is, the quantity of the fraud and, whether you can, and I just don't know. I mean, I don't really want to get into that topic. I mean, I think, whatever the case is, it doesn't matter anyway. It's totally irrelevant. So you've just got to move on.
Adam, I think you're right there to say that. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, please go on.
Just to clarify. I think you're right there to say that you kind of do have to go, whatever your gut feeling may be. Like there's people like Kari Lake are saying, she said to me, we've got mountains of evidence and we're getting more and more every day. I'd take that as a serious note. However, until it's announced officially worldwide that election was stolen, you kind of have to publicly accept it.
Yeah, look, I think that's the case. I mean, I think you just have to do that and just hope that, people are more on their toes now, kind of looking out for fraud because of all the concern about it. And I think that's probably true. I think, some states have passed laws to since the last election to improve the integrity of the outcome. I think that's a good thing. I support all of those things, making it stricter because, the debate about elections after they happen is a real cancer on this country. It's a horrible thing because it distracts entirely from policy debate, which is what you want to be having instead, not arguing over who won.
I don't know if you saw the other day, sorry, that
no, it's okay.
They asked Kari Lake, they accused Kari, the press mob with cameras accused her of being an election denier, and she had one of her assistants hand her 150 pages of the Democrats doing the same thing in previous elections.
Yeah, I saw that, and she's quite right to point that out. Both sides do it, and it's partly a rhetorical flourish, I think. I mean, it's always been the case. The people say such and such shouldn't have won or didn't really win or was illegitimate in some way. It's been going on in the US, probably for as old as the US is. So I mean, as you can see from the polls, the incessant dwelling on this issue by the Democrat machine is not working. I mean, the polls are moving against the party you know, pretty substantially in the last few weeks. So I think most people take it with a grain of salt and just see it, as I said, as a rhetorical flourish that both Republicans and Democrats use from time to time to shore up their base. I mean, I don't think anyone seriously thinks, or, you know, I don't know, maybe some deluded Democrats do, but I don't think they seriously think that Republicans are going to, you know, seize control and somehow turn America into a dictatorship. I mean, that is completely absurd. But their, you know, their rhetoric would lead someone to believe that that's what they think they're going to do. But I don't think they really believe that. And in fact, we know that they don't believe that because they've been supporting in the primaries throughout this year the more hardcore MAGA Republicans. Now, if they really thought that those MAGA Republicans were in fact fascists or were in fact, you know, totalitarians, I don't think they'd be actually supporting their candidacy. But they support them because of cynical political reasons that they think that they're more likely to, you know, that their candidate is more likely to win the general election. And now that actually may turn out false, but you know, we'll find out in a couple of weeks. But anyway, the main topic here about the election integrity is I just wish it would go away and that we could have policy debates again. But I fear that, you know, we'll see, you know, the same sorts of arguments made after this election. We'll see what happens. Anyway, just on Carrie Lake, I think it's almost certain that she's going to win in that state. And she's, you know, she's so impressive. I must say, I've never been starstruck by a politician before, but I really was by her. I went to a rally that she held with Glenn Youngkin on a Wednesday night last week, and I'm going to write it up as an Enquirer piece this Saturday. And she's just so articulate. You know, she's very glamorous. She had all the right things to say at the right time. I mean, she blows away any Australian politician. I mean, absolutely, you know, they wouldn't come close to her polish on the kind of on the stage. She's a force, and I think if she wins, she'll certainly be talked about a lot as either vice president or maybe even one day president of the United States. So she has a big career, I think, ahead.
I think so too. And you know what she points out, which I think is stunning as well, is that Biden's been in office now for what, close to 2 years, and he received 81 million votes. That's a very large constituency. I haven't seen the Democrats represent that constituency with any policies that have benefited them in any pragmatic ways.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. I mean, they've only been talking about January the 6th, basically, and abortion most of this year. And they were gifted the abortion issue by the Supreme Court. So it's not like they actually really achieved anything or did anything with that. They would point to their Inflation Reduction Act and to their bipartisan infrastructure law that they passed last year. But in the big scheme of things, I think those things are just the more spending of federal money, which is, you know, hardly anything new. And, you know, as for the, you know, about the only tangible thing in the Inflation Reduction Act is the reduction of some pharmaceutical prices, which I think is a good thing. But if you look at the details, it doesn't start for years, and there are very, very few drugs that are actually part of the program anyway. So this argument that some Democrats are making that they're taking on Big Pharma is just completely comical, especially when you look at it, you know, in the wake of the extraordinary absurdity of vaccine purchases and mandates by federal authorities. I mean, actually, it's worth pointing out, I think the federal government here has spent something like $6 billion on these latest boosters, and something like 5% of people have got them. So they've bought more than 100 million doses, well over 100 million. I think maybe 150 million or something like that. And about 10 million doses have been used in 5 weeks. So basically it suggests that they're all going to go to waste, basically, as this, you know, COVID hysterica dissipates, thank God. People just don't want them.
Well, the vaccine goes to waste, say that 5%, but the 95% of the money still comes out of the taxpayer's wallet, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, it's interesting. I think we're going, this is taking a big step back, but I think the decades that we've lived through where, you know, budget deficits didn't matter, and, you know, basically governments would just borrow as much as they wanted for whatever, I think that that's going to come to an end because the cost, you know, interest rates are going up. And I think it's getting more and more expensive for governments to finance things with debt. So I think they're going to have to be more careful with their money. That's the bottom line. And so I think that, you know, there'll be less of this excess. I think you'll see it with the Australian budget this week too. My bet is there'll be very little new spending, and that's by a Labor government. So, anyway, it remains to be seen.
Mate, before I let you go, what's staying on economics? What's your prediction in the next 6 to 12 months in the US, and then I guess Australia would be a knock on effect of that in terms of cash rate and in terms of inflation?
Well, look, I mean, I think I think interest rates are going to go higher here. I mean, I think the current cash rate or the benchmark funds rate, as they call it here, I think it's something about, you know, 3 point something at the moment. I think it's going to go to 4 or even higher. I mean, the risk is I think the Federal Reserve overshoots, lifts rates, you know, kind of too high, if you like, you know, partly because it wants to impress everyone with its credibility and you know, show that it's very determined to get inflation back to 2%. And, you know, just for your listeners, inflation is currently 8.2% and it's been above 8 for about 7 months in a row, I think. So that's very embarrassing for a central bank that targets inflation at 2%. But talking to some pretty senior economists recently, their fear is that, you know, because of these large lags that exist between change in interest rates and the impact on the economy, you know, lags as much as 18 months, you know, 12, 18 months, your central banks don't really know what impact these, you know, the last 7 or 8 months of rate rises are going to have yet. But of course, they're still increasing them though, because of the perception pressure, if you like, from markets, and I guess some political pressure too, to be seen to be doing something to stopping inflation. So, you know, the risk is that in, you know, 4 or 5 months, there's a, you know, sudden slump in the economy in the US and a very rapid increase in the unemployment rate. And if you look back through US history, when there is a recession, there's a very, very quick increase in the unemployment rate. You know, it happens very, very quickly. So sure, at the moment it's 3.5%. That's very good. It's been at that level for, you know, for many months, and, you know, the figures keep coming in each month, still very low. But my point is that suddenly it could be very high if, you know, when the economy does slow down. And look, it has to slow down. I mean, you can't have 7% mortgage rates as they currently are without having a big impact on home construction, right? Because fewer people are going to buy a new house, at least a new house, when you've got 7% rates. And a lot of cars are bought on credit too in this country. So there's going to be a slowdown in car purchases, which means a slowdown in car manufacturing. So you know, those two industries, car manufacturing and home construction, they employ a lot of people. And, you know, when they slow down, then they'll slow down the whole economy too. So I do expect there'll be some sort of recession in the next 6 months. But I think most economists have been shocked it hasn't happened yet, because we have had those significant rate rises. But I think it will happen, just a matter of time.
Okay, we'll get a copy of The Weekend Australian on Saturday and read Adam's inquiry piece on Kari Lake, the likely future governor of Arizona and potentially a future president. Adam, thanks a lot for coming back on the program again. It's always a pleasure to have you on, mate.
It was great, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, mate.
Inside Out with Nick Holt.